You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
So, on my good microphone and listening to my own voice, this one is a deep breath. I will throw back something, though, that we brought up a lot when we talked on the Mission Briefing feed, which is the worst Indiana Jones movie is still better than most of the movies we do on this show and a lot of the movies around. However, this is a big wet fart of a movie. I remember it. You'll hear the story if you listen to the episode about how I first saw it. But past that, it's just weird, man. So that's all I'm going to say now. Anyway, standard stuff. I want to thank you guys for listening. I want to thank you guys for being a part of this show. I want to thank you for coming out to both Monsterama and my Cineprov show last month. And I want to thank you for coming out to Cineprov and the Cineprov shorts next month. And then thank you for reviewing us, and thanks, I guess, for making me watch this movie. I hadn't revisited it. It wasn't as bad as I expected, but it's not great, and might be one of Spielberg's worst, in fact. So, hooray!
My name is Brian Foster.
Everything you know is wrong. Got that?
Now, the reason that I'm calling is because I have begun to suspect you don't have any ladybugs in your freezer.
Hey guys, Roy here. So about your car?
The darkness was never empty.
There's this presence in my head.
But I'm pretty sure that the book was confiscated by cats.
You're damn right we find a lot of bodies when Foster is around.
And some people call me The Night Blogger.
Welcome to my Epic Adventure Childhood. This week we watched Indiana Jones and the Curse Legend
Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
The Noun of the Crystal Skulls, the one that you made us do because this is the whole reason you chose Indiana Jones month. Don't lie, people.
You just want to torture us, don't you?
The hundreds of you who voted online, this is why you chose it. So, I guess. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of my Epic Adventure Childhood and award-winning riffer on Cineprov. And on panel we have
Not award-winning yet horror writer Matthew W. Quinn.
Charlie Rose of Nothing Particularly Special.
Hey, this is Daniel, and the fridge didn't save me from a bottle rocket.
So, here's the thing. Charlie, you haven't done this in a while, so I'm going to pick on you a lot.
Yay!
But only because we haven't seen you in months and you show up for this movie. Yeah. We have done so many fun... I think the last one you did was Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
I can see why you chose that one, but this one's a complete mystery.
We'll get into it. But this one disappointed everyone when it came out. And
I'm going to go ahead and stop you right there, because if I recall correctly, it was very critically beloved when it came out. It had like a huge Rotten Tomatoes score. It was like I think it's still maybe in the 70s.
It is in the 70s.
No kidding.
It was the fans that really ripped it to shreds after it came out, especially after that South Park episode where it shows Lucas and Spielberg doing that deliverance scene to everybody's childhood.
And I think Ebert gave it 3.5 out of 4.
Yeah, which is the same as Last Crusade.
Yeah, so... All right.
I was more nervous about returning to Last Crusade than this one because I had such a low opinion of this one coming in. It actually did better than I thought. I'll be honest.
Last Crusade held up too, so I was just more worried that that one, which had some CGI in it as well, would be a little rougher coming out in 1989. But this one coming out in 2008,
CGI groundhogs. It didn't come out very well.
Oh, those goddamn groundhogs!
Why were they there? Did someone say, you know, we need to punch up this scene when a car drives by? I guess
to set the scene that it's in Nevada or wherever it is.
This ain't your mama's Indian. Actually, it is the same Indiana Jones. He's just an old man, which they remind us of constantly.
Yeah, some of those stuff, like when he tries to swing after the what's her name, the Russian chick, and he can't make it and swings right back into the oncoming truck. That was hilarious.
I thought it was closer. The other thing that this one bothers me just a little bit of is, other than reoccurring characters, because again, the last three are effectively Bond movies.
Right.
And so, like, if I like the scenes when he goes back to the university, because it's not unlike when Bond has a Q scene or something, like, you know, where M gives him the mission. Like, that's fine. This one does it so many times that we even see the Ark of the Covenant at one point. And I'm just like, guys, I get it. It's an Indiana Jones movie. The second he puts on the hat, it's an Indiana Jones movie.
They already made that joke in Last Crusade anyway, with the bit and with the hieroglyphs bit.
Yeah, exactly. You don't. We're here. You don't have to convince us we should be here. I love you very much, Indy.
I remember back in the day around 1999 or 2000, when all those websites were coming out, where essentially what would happen is people would work at Hollywood studio offices and then they'd overhear something and then submit it to the interwebs, and then suddenly it was all over. Oh my God, they're going to make an Indiana Jones 4 or a Back to the Future 4, or Avatar was apparently something in development way back then. So Corona's coming attractions. If anybody wants to at me with memories of that, go for it.
I remember the coming attractions website. Shoot.
Yeah, they had a whole bunch of Indy 4 stuff. And every time I'd read it, it's just like, oh, that's a cute idea. It's never going to happen, but it's cute.
I remember they predicted a lot of stuff. Like, I think they predicted for this Independence Day sequel that President Whitmore would be having mental problems, mm-hmm. which they ended up including in the actual movie.
That was something back then.
Yeah, it must have taken them quite a while to make it.
And this is back in 2000, people. So this is how original Hollywood is.
Well, but here's the thing. Everyone wanted an Indiana Jones sequel, but like for a while he was just saying, it's The Last Crusade, we're done.
Yeah,
we're done.
Lucas, actually, I was reading, apparently back in the 90s when they were doing Young Indiana Jones, Lucas got this wild hair that he had to do a B-movie horror type of sequel. And it had to be science fiction, and it had to be aliens.
Hey, Steven, yeah, it was like the 50s vibe and not the 30s
vibe. Yeah, and it was the 50s vibe. And sure enough, that held all the way through to 2008 when this came out.
That's dedication.
Steven,
right?
You know what's popular right now is CGI aliens. I'll show you. It's 1999, and I'm going to include all sorts of CGI aliens in my new movie.
You need about 30% more gobbler.
Hey, Steven, Sebulba's available. We could have some Sebulba. You know,
I at least want to try and sound human.
Sebulba begins. You know, he could be in a race car, you know, at the beginning, like with a bunch of sexy teens, Steven, and he could be racing against Indiana Jones. And
Sebulba and sexy teens. Rule 34.
Oof.
Thanks, Matt. I was going to eat more later.
Well, Sebulba does have strong arms. I mean, you never know.
All right. So I guess at this point we might as well get into it, because you guys just did. Gross. So as you guys probably guess, sometimes you guys have listened to the podcast. I can't remember any actor or character names ever, mainly because I'm bad at life. But so I pulled up IMDb, and the first related news is Frank Marshall gives Indiana Jones 5 update, confirms no involvement from George Lucas.
It's a big update.
Don't feel bad for George Lucas. He sits on a pile of money in Napa, California.
He is at least $1.5 billion richer than Trump, if you assume that Trump's not lying about his net worth.
He's about $1.5 billion worth more than I'll ever be worth. So you're fine. He's fine. Don't worry.
You're going to be worth $3 billion.
You got to start writing that Black Knight satellite story, Nick.
Oh God, I haven't looked at what you're talking about in a decade. But Kathleen Kennedy is re-upped with Lucasfilm, so I guess she'll be around for it.
Hey, Frank.
Did you get my fruit basket, Frank?
Yeah.
Do you think you'll let me in the writer's room, Frank? I got some ideas.
Kathleen Kennedy sends him a muffin basket once a month just to make sure. Just to make sure.
It lasts me about a day, Kathleen.
Got to keep that waddler fresh. So
I use it to store the muffins for the entire month.
He's like a bullfrog with a pouch.
It's like the episode of SpongeBob where he's got the pickles under his tongue and someone's car keys.
Oh, he's Billy Bass. There you go.
Okay.
Give me a plot synopsis, Danny boy.
All right. Well, it's the 1950s, which of course means that we're under the Red Scare, which means that the Russians are looking for this magnetized mummy that exists in the same warehouse that the Ark of the Covenant exists in.
Which is? Area 51, baby. Oh. Mm-hmm.
The most unguarded secret facility in the country.
Also, if you're going to do this, how is David Duchovny not one of the FBI agents, just for funsies?
Well, they got the janitor from Scrubs.
They had one guy, but the other guy should have just been Duchovny or the cigarette-smoking man.
Oh, this is the second. I just realized this is the second Harrison Ford movie that the janitor from Scrubs has been in.
What's the other?
The Fugitive. Remember that episode?
Oh, he is the Fugitive. Oh, that's so great. Oh, that's such a great. If you haven't seen that episode of Scrubs, do go.
Yeah, that's good. So the Russians kidnap Indiana Jones and whoever Ray Winstone is.
Winstone.
Okay.
Ray Winstone is. Mac. Yeah, it's Mac. George Mackel. He's a MI6.
Oh, everybody's got single syllable names in this. There's Mac. There's Mutt. There's Ox. We'll get into that. But anyway. So they're looking for this corpse, and specifically they're looking for it because one of them supposedly has this crystal skull that's not been manufactured by humans that one of Indy's former colleagues named Ox has, and that's John Hurt, who is just completely rip-roaring drunk throughout the movie.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. So they go to find Ox, and then they go and find they go and use this to try and find El Dorado, which is apparently where these alien super beings are being held, and try and beat the Russians there. And that's all
I
got.
I think it's in Brazil.
At this point, I do not care.
It's
somewhere in South America. And in the Indiana Jones universe, South America is all one giant country.
I mean, you're not 100% wrong, but we end up through what it feels like is a serial through what they would call blackest Africa. Like, you know, it's just impossible monsterman. Whatever. Some notes at the beginning. We're reminded that Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones is too old. We're reminded, I think, in the first 5 minutes that his father is dead.
And
Marcus Brody. Because on one hand, Denholm Elliott, the actor, is actually passed away. On the other hand, Sean Connery was like, nope.
Nope, I am not going to do it.
I'm sorry, son, but I'd rather be drunk and naked during the sun. And unfortunately...
Steven, you can no longer afford me.
Bang.
Steven, go to hell. I am not a very nice person anymore.
But I mean, here's the thing. Jim Broadbent is a trade down as Dean Charles... Right?
You're not. I love Jim Broadbent. That's the thing. But you're not wrong.
I mean, he's just a sad sack. I mean, he is a wet sandwich.
Well, he's only in like two or three scenes.
Like a total time of like 7 minutes, maybe.
But here's the thing. Like in Last Crusade, Marcus Brody is drunken in the field. He's like, I've got this. And I mean, like that whole line is like, and he's like, he knows 12 languages. He'll blend in like a chameleon. And he's just wandering like a tourist.
Does anybody speak English?
Or ancient Greek?
But I mean, he is so clearly drunk. Even if his character's not supposed to be, the actor's just wandering through Marrakesh on a bottle of wine.
Looking back at the Indiana Jones movies, there weren't really any stars in them. There was Harrison Ford, of course. There was Sean Connery in the third one. There were a bunch of character actors like Karen Allen, who'd already been in Animal House and then was in Starman and then The Sandlot, if you're keeping track.
I was.
Was she the mom in Sandlot?
She was.
Okay, that makes sense to be the right age.
Right.
You're forgetting Kate Capshaw. So I'm going to stop.
Well. Oh, yeah.
Star. I'm talking about stars here.
Thank you, whoever it was who sent me that clip of Stewie talking about trashing Temple of Doom. That's going in my review. Was that you, Daniel, or was it Nick?
That was probably me.
Probably Nick.
Jonathan Rhys-Davies isn't in this, but I think by this point he was hating on the Muslims. The Muslims are destroying America.
I've got Peter Jackson money now.
Despite the fact that he made his career playing a presumably Muslim guy.
He was a huge English theater actor first, I think.
Oh.
You mean Salah?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Salah was a Christian.
He was?
They bring it up in the first two movies. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's useless. It's all useless. I could have used some more Pinewood actors because they fill out everything. That's why you, every time you see a Nazi and you're like, wasn't he in Star Wars? You're right.
Right.
In fact, one of the generals in the AT-AT was Donovan.
Yep.
Julian Glover, Walter Donovan.
I'm getting it now, the face now.
Yeah.
He had the same face in both movies, in fact.
I'm explaining how I understand.
Well,
it
if
now.
They were
going to
follow
it.
That same logic, though, for this one, then it would have been a whole bunch of actors from the prequels, which nobody would have wanted.
Oh, my God. Again, Sebulba was available. Okay, so we should get into this. So the Area 51 scene starts out. Well, okay, so my daughter, who's two, Cindy Lou Who, who is no more than two, has been watching these with me, and I actually convinced her after the first one. We can watch an Indy Jones movie. She's like, Indy Jones. She liked Indiana Jones. The first one, Indy doesn't show up for 9 minutes. Mm-hmm. And she was like, not this. And I'm like, but this is Indiana Jones. She goes, no Indiana Jones. She literally said, no Indy Jones. No Indy, and she's right.
Ooh, yeah.
And then he shows up, and she's excited. We watch it for 10 more minutes, and she's like, not this one. And I'm like, but it's Indiana Jones. She goes, Indiana Jones, not this one. And she figured it out 20 minutes in, guys.
Is this this one that you guys were watching?
This is the one you were watching. And I was just on, you know, whatever, 4 days ago when I was first watching this. And she was out, man. And I get it. The first one starts with the most incredible, like, Legends of the Hidden Temple. They're in this thing. There's like, don't touch, watch the light, don't hit these pads, whatever. Like, and he's explaining stuff, and it's neat. And by the third one, he has to learn things. This one, he doesn't do anything. He just kind of stumbles along, and he's like, remember that mission out in Berlin?
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. Oh, my God. And there's even a line. 10 years ago, when you were in New Mexico, you discovered a mummy of some sort. Just like, oh my God.
Oh, they imply that he was part of the Manhattan Project somehow, don't they?
I think that the idea that they brought him in to examine the Roswell crash.
Yeah, they do, but they also mentioned that he was part of the Manhattan Project.
Exactly. Mm. He's apparently been part of every major American accomplishment in the previous 30 years.
This is why it should have been David Duchovny, right? Mm. Because this is an X-Files thing. This is like a crazy man on a board just writing things that happened in the 40s and then it's just drawing lines and every line is
new
Indiana Jones.
New Indiana Jones 5 pitch. He is now officially the cigarette smoking man.
Better. How could it not be? And Mitch Pileggi just shows up as a young upstart with hair still somehow. I mean, come on. That man never... He's bald in a way that makes you wonder if he didn't go bald in middle school.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're forgetting a big part of all this that we haven't mentioned yet.
Kate Capshaw. No, Kate Blanchett.
Other Kate. Which, Irina by the way... Spolkel.
I am Stalin groupie. I have very sinister mind control plot.
Moose and squirrel?
Okay.
I mean, the whole Russian psychic thing, I was just not in... excited about the fact that they went in that direction. Psychic powers.
Here's the thing. You and I are on the same page here. It's command and conquer. Isn't it? It's that, what is it, that Yuri expansion where it's all psychic power. It's... Here's the thing. I get it. You're done with the Nazi thing. And Stalin was interested in these... You can go... I'm frustrated. Here's the thing about all of it. We were talking about this before. There's a thing about archaeological treasures, which the Nazis wanted because they had this belief that anything that could give us power, let's do it.
Because the Nazis were all huge nerds as well.
But they were. They were cult nerds. Like, why not? I mean, it's the same people who wear aluminum foil and talk about the Illuminati and the Knights Templar now. Yeah. Fine. Here's the thing, though. There's no magic in the Indiana Jones movie until the last scene, the last act. Like, it's at the very end. Here, magic happens immediately. And I love the idea. You can even say it's aliens. Whatever. You can even do the thing.
I'm not saying it was aliens, but it was aliens.
But that's the thing, though. That's the problem with the movie. You're dead on. Indiana Jones literally was at the pyramids and the Temple Mount and all that stuff that people claim are built by aliens before. Aliens never show up there. And the whole Von Daniken Chariot of the God thing, the most important thing, one of his most first pieces of evidence is the Ark of the Covenant. And it's not there either. So how can there be aliens now? And they're there the whole time. It's not one scene.
Excuse me, interdimensional beings as a point of order.
It's the space between spaces, says the drunk midway through this. Not midway through. It's a 10-minute sequence at the end of the movie when the CGI is just... It's practically a loading scene from, like, Assassin's Creed, and it takes for goddamn ever.
Yeah.
Sorry, Charlie, go ahead, man.
Worst MacGuffin ever. But the one thing, okay, the one thing I love and hate about this movie is this. If I watch the movie, you can take this entire plot of aliens out, keep all the scenes, and throw in a new MacGuffin, and you have a better movie.
You do.
A freaking movie.
No, no, please. It's a fucking movie.
Beep.
But no, but pick a, there's other ancient treasures you could do that'd be fun.
Yes!
I remember there being a script at one point where it was him trying to find Excalibur.
Better.
Better. Yes, definitely.
They had a one of the, I think it was one of the video games, Indiana Jones, the Infernal Machine, where he's fighting the communists to try and get a gate in a Stargate in Babylon, basically. So I'm wondering if maybe they were drawing Stargate? From this.
Oh.
Yeah, the Anunnaki, you know, the theory that they're... I can tell you're groaning in agony over there.
But like, okay, so Anunnaki with a Stargate, fine. But that's not a treasure. That's not something that exists. Like, just well, make it Judeo-Christian.
Excalibur doesn't exist. Yes,
they do best with the Judeo-Christian stuff. Longin a spear, the silver, the 30 pieces of silver. These would have been so much cooler.
Well, and then there's no explanation needed.
Yeah.
Like, you just say it's the Spear of Destiny or the Spear of Longinus. Done. People know what that is. Yeah. You know, the Necronomicon is a thing. You know, do the Book of the Dead, the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Like,
yeah.
The Necronomicon would have been kind of cool at the end. He can fight like some tentacled horror.
No, just the opposite. Brody dies and he resurrects him. He
chainsaws his own hand off at one point.
And then like welds the whip right to it.
Oh, you. But yeah, I mean, but that's what I mean. Do a foreign treasure. I don't care, but do something that doesn't need a lot. Like, Indiana Jones shouldn't fight the Loch Ness Monster either.
Well, here's, I think, the thing about this whole plot.
That would have been kind of cool.
It wouldn't. Stop it. That's not his role. Like, we don't need Nessie to come up and wink. We don't need the Yeti to, like, high-five him at the end as they're punching Nazis. Like, that's not this movie.
He can ride Nessie into battle.
Here's the whole thing about this plot. It's that they weren't passionate about it. When you're watching Last Crusade, you, or at least I, believed that the filmmakers thought the Holy Grail was an actual thing that could be found. Same with Raiders. I believed that the filmmakers thought that the Ark of the Covenant exists and actually had these devastating powers that could be used against the Nazis. This time, nobody cared. I mean, they didn't consider the Russians bad villains, so they didn't try to make them, and they didn't consider this whole alien plot, they didn't take it seriously.
Well, and then the only thing that had... The CGI problem I have is, weight. Everything feels invisible. Like, the ants feel invisible, right? Mm-hmm. The skull, at least, had weight. I did like how the crystal skull looked. Mm-hmm. But other than that, everything else felt weightless, unnecessary, like, flippant. And that's the problem. It's also introduced in the first 20, 30, 40 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, again, like, we don't get the weight of the Holy Grail into that last scene. And that's why it's so important. That's why it has so much power. Because Donovan grabs the wrong one and he melts away and you realize that there's a kind of divine magic to it. That's what's cool. This has no magic anywhere. No. We need to talk about this actual movie though.
Well, we get through the warehouse scene and then the Russians are chasing him and then we get to the most famous scene in this movie, for better or for worse, which is the nuclear testing scene.
Yeah.
This is like within the first half hour, I think. I didn't time
it. Yeah, no,
but
we're right there.
It's very early.
So he ends up in somewhere in, you know, in the deserts around Nevada and New Mexico.
Where they would actually build these sorts of towns to do nuclear testing.
If you've ever seen the video or GIF of a house where it looks like a blast hits it and then sucks it back through, that's what these are. They would set up suburban kind of towns and they would blow them up with nukes to see what would happen. And so we would know what the effects would be.
And according to this movie, they'd hook it up to a TV so that the dummy family could watch Howdy Doody.
That's attention to detail.
That's bullshit because it didn't happen.
But
it's really funny because he stumbles across this town like he's in a zombie movie and like, help, help. And then everyone's fake, which is kind of great. And this is the famous nuke the fridge scene.
Now, there are two things about the nuke the fridge scene. First and foremost, this was a holdover idea from Back to the Future because the time machine was meant to be a fridge.
That's exactly
right.
And
that's how they would have gotten back from the 50s was by literally going to a nuclear test.
Yeah, this is a bad idea that someone said, you know, we could use?
Well, that's my second point, though, with this is I kind of want to defend the nuke the fridge scene, if only because it's ridiculous. But that's what Indiana Jones is. He's always been about ridiculous action scenes. And in the setting, what could be more ridiculous than surviving a nuclear bomb?
To me, it's the same scene as the Temple of Doom, where they ride a raft out of the plane as it's crashing and miraculously survive.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous, but it fits the world.
I don't have problems with the nuke the fridge scene. I feel like my biggest problem with it is what you said. A lot of this movie feels like it was everyone's first idea. Mm-hmm. Right? Someone thought it was cool. They didn't know how it was going to happen, but he goes from the middle of Area 51 into the middle of a nuclear weapons site so quickly that you'd be like, hey, wouldn't this also destroy Area 51? Doesn't matter. We never see it again. And then they destroy the town, which is cool. And then he ends up flying hundreds of yards in a thing. I don't think, whether the nuke the fridge scene, like whether he would have survived the nuclear blast or not in a fridge, probably not. Flying hundreds and hundreds of yards, he would have died.
It was the whole lead line thing is what I think they were going for.
Sure, but within a mile or so, he would have melted. We know that from real life.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, everything else melted around him.
Yeah.
But he was fine. He didn't bake inside the fridge.
It's cold.
Depends how far away it was from the blast zone.
It was in the blast zone. Also, we know what saved him. It's his hat. His hat is his Patronus. It's his conic screwdriver. Pick your metaphor. But the second he loses it, he's like Velma without her glasses. He's like, oh my God, the hat. Where's the hat? And he puts it on. He's like, and he even stands up a little straighter as though he's been revived. That's the thing.
Well, he did in story time drink from the Holy Grail about 19 years earlier. Maybe that helped.
He crossed the seal.
He broke the seal. But here's the thing. We know it doesn't keep you alive. It revives you every time you drink from it. That's what the monk said, right? Or was the knight said. I learned that from the movie this time watching. It was the first time I noticed it because I don't pay a lot of attention to movies. Hey, this is our 185th episode. we haven't talked about the worst part of this movie, or at least the most controversial part of this movie. You said it was Nuke the Fridge. I say Shia LaBeouf.
Ooh.
Should
we get into his introduction? Because I only half remember it.
We're here, effectively.
Well, I mean, there's a couple scenes between there. There's the fridge, and then Jones gets debriefed by the FBI, where the FBI basically says, we think you're a double agent. He goes back to try to work at school, and then the... and then he gets fired by the
Jim Broadbent.
By Jim Broadbent. And then he's at a diner and Shia LaBeouf shows up, right?
He's on a train and Shia LaBeouf is chasing it in his motorcycle.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It's the Simpsons scene with Mr. Burns' son chasing the train.
And it's Rebel Without a Cause. Like he's to the parody point of like the Simpsons. Because at one point Homer's like riding it through church and like, that's kind of what Shia LaBeouf's like. He's riding it along the train, then he rides it through a bar, then he rides it through a library at the school.
Well, at that point, they're being chased by a couple communist guys in a car.
I mean, you're not wrong, but you don't ride it through a school, like a library? And then a student comes and asks him for note help. He's like, you weren't at your office hours. I had a question about the notes.
Boy.
Then the movie stops to a halt as he gives him homework assignments.
Well, there's that one good moment during that chase scene where there's that statue of Henry Jones Sr.
No, it wasn't Henry Jones Sr. It was Brody.
It was Brody.
And it falls through the thing and crushes the driver.
Christ, I only watched this movie a couple days ago and I'm already confusing bits of it.
That's one of my problems with this. Unlike the other Indiana Jones movies, which you could argue have its problems, including the first movie, which he's the only reason it happens, right? Because if he never shows up, the Nazis either never find it or they open it and die anyway, right? But here, this movie is just like, let's get to the next set piece. You know, it feels like a bad Bond movie in like the worst ways, right? Like, we have to get the scene where Shia LaBeouf is swinging like George of the Jungle through the forest with a bunch of monkeys. We have to get to the scene where people are being eaten to death by ants somehow.
Yeah, I have no problem with pulpy action sequences, but I hated the Tarzan monkey scene. I just thought it was so kind of stupid.
Well, and it's not just... it would be bad enough if he just did it. But the monkeys have to, like, teach him. Like, the monkeys start to swing, and he's like,
oh, hey, I can swing too.
What a great idea.
It's the same, or at least the same species of monkeys from Raiders. That's all I noticed about the scene.
Well, they are the same continent.
Are they?
No. Yes, they are. Because unless you're not talking from the first scene. Oh, you're right. You're talking about Marrakesh. It's the wrong continent. The monkeys are in Marrakesh. Or in
That Cairo. Marianne is playing with.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
I thought you were talking about maybe the jungle with the Indians and Belloc.
No.
How dare you, sir? So from here, Shia LaBeouf is the cancer on the side of this movie. And I don't blame him completely.
Have you seen the new season of, well, not new anymore, but the third season of Twin Peaks?
Yeah.
Do you remember that scene with Michael Cera showing up on a motorcycle and doing his best Marlon Brando impersonation?
I don't know if it's his best, but I know what you're talking about.
Well, it's Michael Cera's best, trust me. Wouldn't that have been so much better in this movie instead of Shia LaBeouf?
I just wish he wasn't an asshole.
Oh, well wish in one hand, shit in the other, see what fills up.
Well, if you're talking about the character being an asshole, it sounds like he has reason for why he would act that way. He's the guy. The guy he thinks his dad is dead. He has a strained relationship with his mother. Doesn't know what to do with his life. He's an angry young man, basically.
He's a cliche from the movie. I mean, you're not wrong. The problem is, you also get the feeling that no one wanted to be around Shia LaBeouf because
he's an actual cannibal. Shia LaBeouf.
He's an asshole. I mean, at this point, he's clearly drugged out of his mind. Like, he doesn't even make eye contact with the camera without twitching. But also, he's not very good. But again, the problem is not that. It's that once hired, Spielberg didn't say, we should edit him a little bit out of this movie. Right? I mean, frankly, the best scene they have is at the cafe or whatever they're at the diner that they're at. Mm-hmm. They're talking back and forth. It's a talkie-talk scene. And Shia LaBeouf, essentially Indiana Jones notices that there's KGB agents in the restaurant.
Right.
And Shia even pulls out like a flip, like a little butterfly knife. And he goes, son, you literally brought a knife to a gunfight. And they pull out guns, at which point they're being let out with the gun to their back. And they shove a preppy. And so you have a preppy versus a greaser fight. That was
amazing.
That was the best part of this movie. Like, because then we end up on a motorcycle fight where Indiana Jones is again reminded he's not only too old, but it's a scene that we've seen before, literally in the movie before, where you have Indy on a motorcycle and then his father, the old man, in the sidecar.
Yeah.
And this time it's, whatever, 15 years later. They actually
kind of dressed the same way as his dad, too, with that darker suit.
Yep.
Spielberg gets imagery down. He just doesn't get much else this time. Is this his worst movie?
War of the Worlds, I think, is his worst movie.
The Tom Cruise one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of underwhelming.
The one with Tom Hanks.
Worst one I've seen.
The one with Tom Hanks, The Terminal, I hated.
Ooh.
Sorry.
That's where he's like living in the terminal because his home country no longer exists.
Which is a true story, but it's done as the worst way possible. Lost World is up there, but it's not this bad. Lost World is not this bad because Richard Schiff gets torn apart by two T-Rexes simultaneously. And that, I mean, all the Vince Vaughn in the world can't ruin that one scene for me.
I wasn't a big fan of The Post.
Yeah, but that's not bad. It's boring.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a boring movie. This movie is just like... Does that mean you hate this more than Temple of Doom?
Ooh.
We'll get to the end. We'll get to the end.
Yeah. That's deep, man.
So after some fisticuffs, and these are quite literally like fisticuffs. There's not a lot of drag out here because Harrison Ford doesn't want to do a lot of this. We end up in South America soon with Mutt, who's Shia's character's name, Mutt.
Yes.
With his motorcycle.
When do they meet Ox again? Because they do run into Ox at one point. He's already been kidnapped.
The Russians camp in the jungle. That's to actually meet Ox.
Okay.
Yeah. They're trying to. They've heard tell that Ox has gone crazy, and he was in this like a prison or an asylum or something.
The scary third world mental institution with screaming people in cages.
Yeah, and so they go to this kind of. He's in almost a turret or something. Like he's in this big round room, and. on the walls, he's been writing like return it, and drawing these alien heads. Here's the thing. Don't make it alien heads, man. And that's the problem. Like, aliens have archetypes. They get to them in the first 5 minutes. There's no mystery. Right? Like, at least it's... Here's your next movie. The Staff of Moses. Guess what? It can perform the miracles of Moses. To everyone else, it's just a stick. We're looking for a fancy stick. That works. But the second you draw one of these crystal skull heads on the wall, I'm like, oh, it's aliens. There's not a mystery. It's just an alien. X-Files is not only over. It's been done for 6 years at this point. It's 2008. I know what it looks like, man. Everyone's done aliens. Indiana Jones is 10 years behind Independence Day, guys.
Yeah, that's, well, at this point, 15.
12. 96.
Yeah.
Time to look up when the Infernal Machine came out.
I mean, what was that, like, Super Solvers? Were you solving a mystery and taking pictures of robots?
No, it was an Indiana Jones, like, Super Nintendo or something game, or the one I mentioned earlier about the Anunnaki.
I know. I'm just asking if you would remember.
LucasArts had a bunch of adventure PC games in the early 90s. I think it was around then.
Yeah, Fate of Atlantis, and then came
there you go. Infernal Machine. If you want to do a world, have him find Atlantis. I mean, stay tuned. We have another movie for next week. But, I mean, here's the thing. Like, that at least can be a world that he can discover. This that feels more up his alley than Space Aliens. Yeah, this Infernal Machine is 1999. 3D, oh. Blah, 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 blah. LucasArts, Nintendo 64, Windows, and Game Boy Color. Google. It's third person Indiana Jones. There you go.
It looks a lot like a kind of more primitive version of Metal Gear.
You know what it is? This is a year and a half, or this is 2 years after Tomb Raider. It's a primitive version of Tomb Raider.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Came out after Tomb Raider. That's a shame. He's a CIA.
Still, this is a better movie than Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Which I'd say one? So. The first one?
Any of them.
Yeah, any of them. I heard the new one wasn't that good either.
Oh, but another movie we've done this season. Is it? No, last season. Is this better than National Treasure?
Ooh.
The first one? The first one?
Yeah, I'm going to say yeah.
I'd say it's pretty close. I don't think I'd be as quick to judge. Because the thing is, Harrison Ford is iconic, but he doesn't clearly want to be in this. Nick Cage is super all over that movie. Nick Cage is like, I'm going to be the next Indiana Jones. And he's like, this dollar bill is telling me something. And you believe that the dollar bill is telling him something. You want him to anyway. Daniels, move us ahead, buddy.
Oh, God, I even forgot where we were. Well, at one
point... The commies capture them again.
We've been welcomed to the jungle.
Yes, where there are fun and games. Yeah. But anyway, they're trying to get Indy and Mac to... Well, Mac's trying to get Indy to reveal what he knows about Ox's research, and Indy's saying no. But then they reveal the ace up their sleeve to get him to cooperate, which is that they've kidnapped Karen Allen.
Right. So I think you missed one thing, which is important, which is when they first get to the jungle, Indiana Jones, after looking up in Ox's essentially prison cell, he discovers that Ox is referring to some specific places, which takes us to an ancient Spanish burial plot where a guy who gathered a lot of gold ends up finding one of these crystal skulls. So Indiana Jones comes in contact with a crystal skull early on and notices that it has this weird magnetic power, just like the magnet corpse we find earlier, which then takes us to the jungle. This is the problem. There's way too much shit in this movie.
Yeah.
But when we get to this tent, that's where he gets investigated. They're trying to find Ox, but they actually already have Ox. Ox is just crazy.
And Mac tries to convince Indy that he's a double agent.
Like in Berlin. Remember Berlin. Oh, we were doubles. I was a double agent. I was a double.
something about his accent. Just anyway, at this point, what's his name? Mutt ends up punching a guy, and then we end up in quicksand because quicksand hasn't been in a movie in 30 years, so who could give a shit?
This wasn't quicksand. They clarified that. It was dry lightning sand pit or something.
With gas,
I'm making
pockets.
A gesture right now that you can't see.
Oh, that's filthy.
Yeah. At which point they send out Ox to find help. He brings the Soviets and...
Well, there's that scene first where they pull Karen Allen out of this sand trap with a vine, and then they toss a giant snake at Indy, and he refuses to touch it.
And because scene. I mean, because character motivation, I guess. Then they end up in a chase through the jungle, and then...
Well, remember, during the near-death experience, Marion reveals to Indy that Mutt is his son.
Henry Jones III.
Big reveal. Dramatic.
And, they spend the next 10 minutes fighting about it in a truck with a Russian soldier who gets sick of it. And that is hilarious.
And then we end up with a truck scene. Like,
oh, yeah, the chase scene.
And here's the thing. This is a good scene because it's Indiana Jones and they can do it. It's just that no one seems like they want to be there. I mean, and that's the problem for a lot of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But... There's a truck scene. Mutt steals a car. It's a boat car. It's a duck. Whatever. And they fly back and forth. At this point, Mutt decides, I'm going to swing through the forest with some monkeys.
And he does.
And he does.
And then eventually the chase ends and we get to the ant scene.
Okay, so let's talk about this ant scene because it's the only thing we really haven't talked much about. One of the generic Russian henchmen falls to the ground. And a bunch of these red ants start to appear, and one appears on what is Kate Blanchett's character's name?
Arina Spolenko or something like that.
Okay, so
I assumed it was Natasha, but
Dr. Spolenko, Natasha, Moose and Squirrel. So Irina sees one and just kind of crushes it, and then looks down. There's thousands of them, and in fact, this one Russian guy who's wounded, like I said, gets taken away.
That part was... Well, here's the thing about this scene. This would have been a very cool Indiana Jones freak scene, you know? Kind of like the Nazi getting diced up by a propeller in the first one. But the ants are all CGI, and they just look so terrible.
They're weightless.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's nothing to them.
And the other side of it is, I don't know how you would have done this scene in real life, but there's just no motivation. Like... People just seem like the second they fall, that's kind of it. Like, frankly, the best part of the scene to me is at one point, Arena runs up a tree and is holding on like to a rope or something for dear life. Mm-hmm. And the ants start to stack themselves to reach
up
to her.
Which they do.
Which they do. I mean, and that's it. Like, that means someone did work. And you see little bits of work here or there, but... Then because we need our MacGuffin, the crystal skull they're afraid of because of reasons. And so there's this kind of bubble where CGI doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And so Indiana and the chief Russian soldier, well, the chief Russian soldier is kicking the crap out of him for most of it.
Please, his character name is listed as Russian Suit.
I think the guy's name is supposed to be Duvrochenko.
Yeah, Duvrochenko. That's the main guy. His name is Igor Zhuzhinsky.
Okay, but... You were asking how to do this in a live scene, and we've done a movie that does this same scene better, and that was the first Mummy with Brendan Fraser in it and all those scarabs.
You know what? You're right. And those had weight, and when they enter, what's his name? The
Benny.
Guy?
Yeah. No, not Benny. The other guy, the prison warden,
the
right?
Prison, yeah, his mouth. Just hundreds of them enter his mouth. Like, it goes quick, but the thing with bad CGI is... Do it in the dark and make it go quick.
Yeah. Or even better, show us the results. Like, go ahead and show us a chewed up Russian corpse or something.
One skeletal hand reaching out.
Yeah.
Sells the scene.
And it would have worked well in Indiana Jones.
And you could have just had a fake hand. You don't have to CGI that. Like, the less you CGI, the better. But meanwhile, the way this scene is depicted, you just see like a lumpy corpse going into the ant hole.
He's still screaming at that point.
This scene, with his legs twitching in the air.
This scene kind of exemplifies everything that Crystal Skull was trying to do and everything it did wrong. You could tell that they had some ideas that were ambitious, but they just half-assed it, and nothing carried any weight.
They tried to do too much.
So too much. And just simplify it, man. Like, I dig the ants, but I'd rather it look like Evil Dead 2 than this.
Yeah.
Because then you have something, anything, like, whatever.
How has there never been an Ash v. Indiana Jones movie?
I'm sure it was a comic book, and I'm sure I'm not going to read it, just like there was... Alien versus Predator versus Ash in Dead Horse comics?
Dark Horse.
Dead Horse. Well, I mean, the plot.
Well, they are beating it sometimes.
Gross.
Phrasing. Are we not doing phrasing?
No, sometimes we just let it sit. Anyway, here's the thing. I don't know. Like, the scene ends with Karen Allen showing up and driving out of Movie Town. Like, let's go to the next scene, guys. Whoa!
Driving them all off waterfalls three times, the point when wonders how they're still alive.
Oh, yeah, that bit where there will be three drops. What is he talking about? Well, you just rode down a waterfall. Do you want to put two and two together?
But that's the thing. In other movies, they wouldn't, but here Indy goes, wait, there's supposed to be three of them? Well, this was one, and whoa!
The camera pulls out, off a cliff.
I mean, it's literally a bit from a National Lampoon's movie. Like, it's like Christmas Vacation or something.
Indiana Jones Christmas Vacation. This could be fun.
Oh, my God. He's trying to, like, do Christmas shopping. Goes, Miriam, it's the perfect gift. And he's just...
Yeah, he gets Indiana Jones arrested Miriam, for shoplifting.
Miriam, I'm installing a pool.
He's at the Mall of America, and he's got his whip, and he's like, I'm going to get it, Miriam. I'm gonna get a Turbo Man doll for our son.
Miriam, your cousin's RV is parked in the driveway again.
Hello, little university. Hello, statue of Marcus Brody. Welcome home. It's just our Christmas movie montage. Michael Caine comes out and sings.
Everybody needs a montage. How's the song go?
I don't know. I'm going to let you sit on that one.
Merry Christmas, you wonderful old Ark of the Covenant.
That's the joke. At this point, the movie actually starts effectively because they end up in our temple, right? It's the temple of the Crystal Skull. This is where shit starts going down.
It's a Mayan pyramid, basically.
It's a Mayan pyramid. And he goes through it. There are natives. Again, this is what we wanted.
What was up with that?
You know what? You're right. It doesn't make sense. But I don't care because this is the actual part of the movie that we wanted to get to, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not dissimilar from the first scene of Raiders where they might make it through the temple, but the natives are waiting for them outside because you're not supposed to touch it. Why are you trying to touch it? You're not supposed to touch it. Like, that's what's going on here. He has the skull, and that's his out.
They brandish it, and it scares them all away.
Earlier in like episode 20, I used the term McMuffin wrong, and people were like, that's not what MacGuffin is. This movie is all you need to know when you need MacGuffin. Because he literally takes it out and says, this scene's going on too long. Wong. And like the natives are afraid of it. It brainwashes people. It's Batman's utility belt. It might as well have carousel reversal spray in it or whatever.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. I actually really like this movie, but I really can't argue with you on that one. It does a lot of stuff.
It's a utility belt. And the second, like... At one point, there's a door they can't open. He's like, well, what if this opens? And it's also a garage door opener. Like, it does everything. And the problem is, the first movie, he knows too much, and it backfires. He ends up ruining everything. The second one, he knows very little, but stumbles along like a Bond movie. The third one, he has to learn things as he goes. This one, he doesn't care. He has the MacGuffin. He's using cheat codes. He just shows up, and he's like... And now brainwash this guy. Open this door. Stop ants. It does everything. He traipses through this movie as though he's like, I'm not going to do that. Make the skull do it. Right?
I take it you didn't like this movie too much.
I just wanted it to be anything.
Yeah.
This is the wettest fart of a movie. Like,
well, we haven't even gotten to the wettest fart, which is the final scene where we find out what the Crystal Skull is. And
Charlie, you do it, because I can't even.
Okay. So there's one of the things I love about these Indiana Jones movies is that there will be a point at which they have to figure out a puzzle. And there's something clever, and once they figure it out, it gains them entrance to the next level. And for me, that was, you know, the breaking off the pieces and the sand falling out and it creating the entrance to the temple. That's great. That's awesome. But I had to wait the whole movie to get just one of those, whereas like all the other Indiana Jones movies, there's plenty of opportunities for this type of a thing. Mm-hmm. So they get into the temple. They are immediately besieged by the native folk who are in there. They've already been besieged by the native folk. They use the MacGuffin to get by them. They're in the temple, and they find a room full of archaeology of every culture known to man.
It's like the scene in National Treasure where they find the treasure.
Yeah. And Indiana Jones is like, they were archaeologists.
They were archaeologists.
Which I actually kind of liked.
Again, it's not a bad idea, but there's no payoff and no one gives a shit. The first thing they do is destroy it.
Yeah, I mean.
Exactly. And then they go into this big room with 13 crystal skeletons.
And one of them's missing a head.
Hey, clearly.
It's our buddy.
Yeah, how does that work?
And this is the perfect opportunity for the communists to show up.
Also, it's a plot hole because this skull that they're using is the one that came from Area 51, and so its body shouldn't be there because its body was back in Russia where they had the skull.
One, I'm pretty sure that the one they were using was the one they found in the tomb.
So that's where's the one from too. Area 51?
The Russians had it because they were carrying the alien corpse around with them in the jungle.
So that beginning scene literally doesn't matter at all.
It sets a stage for the fact that aliens exist. Because remember, she said that this is probably a distant cousin to whatever this other skull was.
Here's the thing. You're right, and your description is what bothers me the most. not because you said it, but because you're right. Like, the thing I liked about him was he was like a Van Helsing. His knowledge mattered, right? Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. He could defeat ancient evils or whatever because he had no ego about himself. He believed in the public good. And it was his knowledge. It was his the fact that he was a professor mattered. Since all of this is bullshit, it doesn't matter anyway. Like, it's not even like, are aliens real or not? Ox has no idea what they are. None of this stuff knows. Like, he's just cribbing notes from other people. He has a diary that explains stuff. He's like, oh, this is Mayan, I guess. I can speak Mayan. Did you know I can speak Mayan? You're just like,
oh, God damn.
And so, like, there's never a moment where he's reading a cave wall. There's never a moment. He's just like, this skull alien thing. And then, because we're too dumb to understand it, Ox holds up the skull, and then the silhouette fills the drawing, and you're just like, hey, wait a minute. Hey. And then the scene continues because the skull once again has moved us to the next scene.
The skull just propels us through the entire movie.
Well, that's why I'm pitching the next movie.
The Skull of Martian compels you?
No, see, this is why I'm pitching the next movie, Solomon's Codpiece. We can set it in the 70s, and it's like Studio 54, and there's just a bunch of like, what's going to get me through this next scene? Why? Only the mightiest codpiece in the land. And then they just thrust through the rest of the movie because they're already f***ing over the viewers. They might as well f*** them completely.
Are you sure this isn't like some porn parody of Indiana Jones you saw at one point?
Indiana Jonesin?
Yeah.
And I'm making it up as I go along. So, Charlie, buddy.
Yeah.
What happens when they put that crystal skull in place?
Well, the room starts spinning. Yay! And then a lot of stuff happens, and
there's that dumb cartoon alien that shows
yeah,
up.
Yeah, the cartoon alien, and he gives, like, he gives Kate Blanchett what she wants. She wants to know it all.
And she melts. Well, no, she burns.
Yep. He gives her evil eyes. And oh then she, her eyes burn out.
Even the alien doesn't want to be in this movie. He's like, really? And then he melts her, man.
And then a portal to another dimension opens up and they fly their flying saucer through it.
Yep.
And Mac gets sucked up into it too.
Because bye he bye. Wants the gold, all the gold. Hey, Indy, look at this gold. Can you help me carry the gold? Oh, my God.
Oh, that's
hey, I betrayed you to the communists, and I want to recruit you for my scheme to make lots and lots of money.
I mean,
are you a triple agent? No, I just lied about being a double. I'm just like, are you kidding me?
I mean, I expect tropes in a movie like this, but his trope of, like, the greedy man getting killed at the end, oh, it's insulting as hell.
We already saw that in The Mummy, done a lot better.
We saw it in the last movie when the woman where Ilsa wants the Ark of the Covenant, and she's like, I have it. Don't you see? I have it. And there's actually, like, passion. Mac has been, like, barely in this movie. And again, remember, like you said, The Mummy. Like, Benny dies for his gold, but he's a character. Mac is barely a character in this movie. And other than it's Ray Winstone, who has, I guess, the raw charisma of what John Rhys-Davies did before he came out as a huge racist. But I almost
I hate the elves.
I almost, like, I almost wish he did more with the fact that he doesn't care about anything but gold. Like, and he's like, look at the aliens, and he's still stuffing his pockets. You know,
yeah.
Anything. Like, or that the aliens are so stunning he wants to be a part of them in some way. Like, go full Alex Jones, man. Just do anything. Like, oh my God, the aliens. This means everything's true. And, like, he just starts going nuts. But he's just nothing. He's just like, at one point, I paused the movie because as they're running out of the scene we're talking about, mm-hmm. they're running back through the temple and they're escaping the water that's flooding it. Okay. There's a bad edit because they're all stopped and then they all start running together as the scene cuts because they cut the scene in the wrong place. Mm. That's how his character always is. He's just like, where was I in the last scene? Oh, I was getting gold. I'm going to just keep getting gold. Like, there's no development. There's no in-between plots he learns something. In-between scenes he learns. No, no, no. He's just like, hey, this looks like it's valuable. At one point, they come across a dead conquistador, and he's just picking his pockets.
Like, yeah.
There's nothing to any of these
characters. He must have really lost a lot of money at cards.
No, he was promised money. This is all bonus to him. Remember? Because for helping the Russians, he's supposed to be rich. Indy, you just don't get it. I'm riches. Riches and gold riches.
So after the aliens take off, we come to the...
So, Steven, are you making a sequel to Schindler's List too?
What would that be like? Oscar Schindler's Exile in Argentina where he was in poverty?
I need a tan. This medal could have gotten me another Mai Tai. I was one Mai Tai short. If I had traded in this pin, I could have gotten another Mai Tai.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
I have a very specific set of accents, and this is all I've got for you.
Jesus Christ, where was I? No,
the spaceship takes off. Everyone has a good talk.
And then the final scene. We get to the final scene.
So Shia LaBeouf has a hissy fit because his mom, Karen Allen, is back in love with Indiana Jones. Ox remembers everything and is like, oh, young love. And so he has a little tizzy and walks off. So we smash cut to the chapel.
Mm-hmm. To the wedding.
Oh, my God, because they're finally getting married. They're finally getting married.
Mowage.
There's a which is a song from Aladdin 2.
Yes, it is. No, 3.
3.
Aladdin 3.
Oh, my God. Thank you. Thank you for knowing what I'm talking about, because I thought I was...
I'm lost.
They're finally getting married. There's a wedding in Agrabah.
Yep.
So go on.
There sure was.
Thank you.
But please. Anyway, Indiana's wearing like his normal clothes, and Miriam's in a wedding dress, and a whole bunch of people are there. I think originally this was probably supposed to be cameos of a bunch of past characters, but, you know, they called Short Round, and Short Round was like, no.
Short Round should have been Shia LaBeouf's character, by the way.
Ooh.
Better. No, I mean, like, he's already connected to Indiana Jones. They've been separate for 10 years. He's called back into service. Then there's motivation there that's not forced.
Okay.
All right.
Also, we could have made it more racist. He could know karate.
Oh, boy.
Because that's goals we strive for. Yes,
yeah, awesome. That's exactly right.
He could have shouted out Maoist sayings to the Russians.
Oh, my God. If he had an epithet, too, because he died in the Cultural Revolution.
Oh, God.
Oh, man. Dark movie. Indy's in Roswell at the time, so he can't attend the funeral. It's also 47. Anyway, moving on.
So they end up getting married, and then we get the final shot of this movie, which is
the best shot of the movie.
Well, it's Indy's hat just blowing in to the church, and it lands at Mutt's feet, and then Mutt picks it up, and then Indy walks by him and just snatches it out of his hand and puts it on.
Not
and
on your
then
life,
literally
kid.
Roll credits.
And then the movie goes on without Shia LaBeouf. Yeah, and literally the credits start rolling and Shia LaBeouf's still in the scene, and you're just like, movie, end. Just end. Yeah. And he takes out his comb again and greases his hair back and just like, end. End!
Well, the good thing about this is they do play the Indy theme, which is always fun.
It's one of the better themes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, John Williams did do the score for this as well, which is always a bright spot.
Yep.
At some point he goes from being on indefinite suspension to being made the associate dean.
Oh,
yeah, that's right.
So now he has no. He now he is married, 60, and has way too much work. He's not going to be adventuring very much anymore.
I'll tell you what. I appreciate the fact, having taught history at a university, that they show that academia is really just shitty to everyone. Even Indiana Jones.
Well, he wasn't doing any academic work.
Yeah.
Like in any of these movies.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, Frank. Okay, so there's no defendant this time because you, the listener, voted for this, and thanks for participating in our Twitter poll and our Facebook poll. And you want to announce this? March, we're doing. April. We're doing a listener request month. So if you have suggestions, keep adding them. I have a few from both Twitter and Facebook that I'm making a list of, but. We're going to open the we're going to make a general call soon. So go to the Facebook page. Our phone number's there. We have a Google line, so you can leave voicemails. But send us messages. We'll keep making a list, and we'll pick our favorites of your suggestions for April. But that means, of course, this month there was no defendant. So Daniel, we'll just go around the horn and talk about our final thoughts. And I guess we'll start with, for all three of you as well as me, why don't we rank the indie movies? Since we're here, I mean, why not? How do you want to do this? Do you want to just list your order?
Yeah, I can list my order.
Please, go ahead first.
All right. I feel like I need a minute. I'm going to go Crusade, Raiders, maybe, and I kind of hate to do this, but maybe Crystal Skull and then Temple of Doom.
Okay.
And I've been giving Crystal Skull a lot of shit, but you know what? I'd rather watch this again for all its flaws than Temple of Doom.
And then give us your final thoughts.
I have a feeling that if you had taken this script and made this movie and released it in the same year as the first Star Wars prequel in 99, right? It would have been a lot better received.
Yeah.
And I think that the people involved would have cared a lot more. I mean, there's definitely some good ideas there. And I like the fact that they were trying to get with the... update the pulpy themes. I mean, in the 30s, it was those sort of adventure movies that the original trilogy was cribbing on. I don't know what trilly is, but... And then they're trying to go for a more sci-fi route this time. I kind of like that idea. It's just, there's no weight to it. Nobody really was as committed to this idea as they had been to the previous ones. And that was also the problem with Temple of Doom that I had. The reason I rank it a little better than Temple of Doom is the characters aren't as annoying.
Fair enough. Charlie Boy, what do you got?
So first, I'm going to go with Raiders, Crusade, Temple of Doom, and Crystal Skull.
I knew I was going to be the outlier on that.
Yeah. So bottom line, it's a series of really good Indiana Jones moments that have been put into a hat, and they just keep pulling them out. It's like, oh, well, we need to have a scene where, like, you know... there's a massive car chase. Okay, boom, let's do that. Okay, now we need a scene where he's chased by natives. Got it. We need very good scripted fight scenes. Got it. So they've got the elements of what makes a good Indiana Jones film, but they put it together in a way that had no soul. Okay, it really left a lot to be desired. And then that ending was crap. A flying saucer flying through some interdimensional pie hole. No, I'm sorry.
Fair enough. Mr. Quinn.
Okay, time for some heresy. Raiders of the Lost Ark best, then Doom, then this one, then Last Crusade.
Oh.
Interesting.
But there is some explanation here. When I saw Last Crusade for the podcast, I was very last minute. I was worried I wouldn't get here on time, so I was probably really impatient with it. And also, I expected this one to suck.
Yeah.
So when I saw it, I'm like, this is hilarious. Like, it's worth seeing just for the... Karen Allen and Harrison Ford arguing half the time. That stuff is really funny.
I do like their chemistry.
They're married couple, except they're not married, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
And so I actually gave this a B. I liked it.
Well, I mean, and building off you, I didn't tell my story of how I saw this. So I was living, staying with my folks at the time, but it was summer. Like, I was drinking with some buddies, and we decided to go see it. And it was a thunderstorm in Atlanta, which, for those of you who don't live down here, we get bad storms, but also our interstates are terrible. So when we drive down the interstate to see it, my buddies had a car that was an old 80s Cadillac that fills the lane anyway. So we are like a freight train going down the road. And if anyone hit their brakes, we would have just had to go through them. So I feel like I'm going to die on the way there. And I'm like, it's worth it to see this Indiana Jones movie. And so my disappointment the first time is also that I could have died for this.
Okay. That.
Now, that being said, here's why I disagree and agree with Daniel simultaneously. I'm with Charlie. Temple of Doom is not a better movie because it's got something about it that just really kicks. It's that it's a complete idea. This movie is not a complete idea. It's scenes tied together with hope and charisma that just never shows up. They're like, Indiana Jones will make this scene lead to the next scene. Nuh-uh. Matt's right. The best part is the conversation, the dialogue, the chemistry between Karen Allen and Indiana Jones. Because sometimes after they fight, he's like, oh, I just have to do this to save the scene. And she has this look of like, oh, right? Like she occasionally gives this look that just sells it. And here's the thing. Harrison Ford is still f***ing Indiana Jones. Like he is that character when he wants to be. The problem is half this movie, he just doesn't want to be. And so my order, Raiders and Last Crusade are close, but I'm going to put Raiders first just because it might have the best introduction of a character ever to film. Honestly, Raiders, then Last, and then Temple, then this. And I like Temple more than most people, but it does deserve to be third out of fourth. Now, I'm not going to say you're wrong because you're Daniel, but you're but from a film perspective, I think this is more competently made when it's made. It's just not a complete idea to me. But that being said, we're out of time. However, it's traditional for me to tell you what the next movie is at this point, this season at least. We'll see if that holds up. We were trying to find a good movie that fit the mold. We did National Treasure too recently, so that sequel's out. So we decided, didn't Disney do a movie where there was like an Indiana Jones premise? Then rewatching it, it also redid a movie that we did this season, which is Stargate. So stay tuned next week when we do Atlantis, The Lost Empire, which is even more of a train wreck than this movie.
You use the word good in a very loose sense there.
I will give everything with Michael J. Fox a bump up over most. I love that guy. Back to the Future might be my favorite movie of all time, and you can't ever take him away from me. So stay tuned next week when we talk about Disney's probably most forgettable animated feature.
Which one was that again? I've already forgot.
Yeah, so did I. Luckily, I took notes. Bye, guys.
My Open Defender Childhood is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Candace Burns, and executive produced by Nick Hoffman and Candace Burns. It is produced by Daniel Suttis, Matthew Quinn, and Thomas Herman. We are a proud member of the ESO Network and a product of Blue Letter Podcasting. Our theme is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find it at incomptech.com. It is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3 license. And thanks.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.